You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Monday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Make sure to subscribe on iTunes and rate and review us over there. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I am here, as always, with David Ramil. On Saturday night, the Heat overcame an early deficit to beat the Memphis Grizzlies, improving their record to 21-20 at the halfway point of the season. Justice Winslow led all scorers with 26 points, his second most points he's scored in his career, and seven total Heat players scored double digits in a solid effort. Miami is off until Tuesday night, but we're recording this on a Monday, so it's time to open up the mailbag, because that's what we do here. As always, thanks to our listeners who submitted questions via voicemail, email, using the hashtag AskLOHeat on Twitter. But let's get to our first question. Comes from Marios, who emailed us asking, "You mentioned Bam's 5 assists versus Boston, and I noticed how often he's getting that number lately. Over the last 13 games, Bam has had exactly 5 assists 7 times and 4 assists once. We're 8-0 in those games. In the other 5 games, he had 2 or less assists, oddly no games of 3, and we're 1-4 in those games. I basically take this as if our bench is making shots, we're going to have a better chance at winning. Do you think it could be more than that, though? That running the ball more through Bam will lead to more victories." David, what do you think?
Well, I kind of went back and looked at those games that Marios was talking about, and I use an arbitrary date from December 8th. But in those games, and that's actually a 17-game sample size, Miami's record has been pretty good overall, 11-6. And in games in which Bam has had less than 4 assists, which is apparently the benchmark that Marius wants to look at, the Heat's record is actually 2-5. So there's something to it there. A couple of those games were tightly contested ones. There was the Raptors game, which was a close one. The Denver Nuggets game, which of course Jokic and his big shot at the end there helped win it for Denver. So there were other games like that. Overall, though, he's on to something there. And 10 games... And the last 10 games, actually, the Heat has actually gone 9-1 in those games where he's had 4 or more assists. So that's a pretty impressive stretch. As far as whether or not we should be going more through Bam, I don't think that's the case. I think it's actually just a result of having Justice inserted into the starting lineup and having some more clarity as far as what the bench unit is supposed to do. I don't know that we're necessarily going through Bam more or less. I just feel like the players that are coming off the bench in that bench unit are better suited to score and have more clearly defined roles, I think. With Derrick Jones Jr. playing at a high level off the bench, with Kelly Olynyk, you know, playing efficiently for the most part off the bench, I just think that those players are a little bit more effective in their roles. Now, Tyler, he's been in and out of the starting lineup, and I think that's, you know, he's better suited for that bench role. We've talked about that on a number of occasions, that his ceiling was probably a 6-man role, a very good one. But now that he's got that clearly defined role, and of course, we can't overlook Dwayne Wade either, these guys know how to play together with Bam. I think Bam is a pretty good passer, an underrated one as such, and I think he's able to find these guys. I'm not sure that I've seen any kind of tendency to run the offense through Bam specifically.
Right.
I just think that he's a natural passer and a skilled one, and these guys in the second unit are a little bit more effective scoring. You know, I think Justice was having a hard time scoring off the bench because the ball wasn't in his hands. He was playing alongside guys like Wade, or Wayne Ellington or Tyler Johnson, guys who were more likely to run the offense, and it was a little bit more difficult. With him now in his starting lineup, he's in control. He knows how to facilitate a little bit better, and I think, you know, that's made his scoring a little bit more proficient of late. But at least that's the way I see it. I don't know if you have a different opinion.
No, I think, first of all, I want to just shout out Marios really quick, because this is exactly the kind of thing that, you know, when you notice a trend like this, you kind of have to dig into the numbers and ask these sort of questions. I mean, that's kind of what we do here, right? Is a lot of times that's kind of how we come up with talking points and things like that. Like, look, the Heat are winning when Bam has a lot of assists.
Yeah.
It turns out that threshold is like 5 assists. Let's dig into that, you know? And so it's a really good observation by Marios, and it's a great question. But ultimately, I do think it's just in those games where he has a lot of assists, it just so happens that the bench is scoring a lot of points. And look, Bam doesn't, he's not a shot creator per se, right? Like, he's not Justice Winslow. He's not Deion Waiters. He's not Goran Dragic. He's not driving and kicking. He's not necessarily creating things that aren't there, but he's a key cog in that offense. He's very much doing what Kelly Olynyk did last year, where, you know, he's out in the high post or, you know, on the elbow or something like that, running dribble handoffs and doing things like that. And when you have Tyler Johnson coming around a screen, grabbing a dribble handoff from Bam and makes the shot, well, then Bam gets the assist for that. But if Tyler doesn't make the shot, then Bam doesn't get the assist. And I think it's really almost as simple as that. Now, I don't want to take anything away from Bam. Like you mentioned, he does have a natural passing acumen. There is a willingness to get guys involved, and he's an underrated passer. Like, he throws good, accurate passes. Right. But I don't know necessarily that the Heat are running their offense, like you said. The second unit isn't running its offense through Bam Adebayo, mm-hmm. but he does help sort of just keep the machine chugging along. Mm-hmm. And that's a really, like, that's great for a center. I mean, you see center, like, there's not every center is Nikola Jokic. Like, you're not going to be running your offense through them. But you look at a guy like Yusuf Nurkic in Portland, who is regularly averaging 3 and 4 and 5 assists a game, is sort of the same thing. Just give him the ball. He'll either make a move towards the basket, or he'll find the open shot maker, and hopefully that person makes the shot, and then he gets credit for the assist. But either way, I've been very impressed with how Bam keeps the ball moving. His energy off the bench, his ability to finish at the rim and dive towards the basket and do all these things. I mean, he just makes the offense, and his screen setting, obviously, he just makes the offense chug along at an efficient rate, and so he's been really good for them.
I will also add that, you know, his scoring hasn't been as impressive either. You know, I mean, he's scoring occasionally, but it's not like he's putting up these monster games where he's putting up a lot of points and then having to distribute the ball as well. That's just not what they're doing as far as whether or not Miami's running the offense through him or not. He's in those 17 games I mentioned, he's actually only scored in double digits in 7 of those games, and one of them was that blowout loss to the Atlanta Hawks. Another one was a blowout win over the Cleveland Cavaliers, etc. You look at the most recent win against Memphis, he had 11 points but only 2 assists. So it's not like wins are naturally tied to that. It's just been a great trend. And again, I think to back up what we're both saying there, he is a capable passer, and that second unit is a little bit more clearly defined now that Justice is in the starting lineup. And I think it's just been a much more efficient version of this team overall.
We'll answer more questions about our rotation and why Josh Richardson has so often been the go-to player in crunch time. We'll do that after this quick break. You asked us questions about Tyler Johnson's contract and the upcoming trade deadline. We'll get to that later on. But first, we've got a two-part question here, or two questions that we're making into one part. Whatever. We'll figure it out. Nico asks, if someone's going to lose minutes to Deion Waiters, who do you think it should be? And then Ming asks, if you guys were Eric Spoelstra, how would your rotation look? Who would you leave out? Derek Jones Jr. needs to play. He's going to be so good. So, Deion Waiters, Derek Jones Jr., both of them have been left out of rotations. Both of them have gotten 20 minutes in games. There seems to be this balance that Eric Spoelstra is trying to figure out between who the 10th and the 11th man is. And recently, David, he's sort of taken on your strategy that you proposed, like play all of them in the first half, see who's good, and then that person plays in the second half. Now, Deion Waiters has been getting in at the very end of the first quarter, the beginning of the second quarter. Derek Jones Jr. has been coming in at the same time as Dwayne Wade or shortly thereafter, midway through the first quarter. Then you got to consider the guys like Tyler Johnson, who's also coming in a similar rotation pattern. Wayne Ellington is obviously and still completely out of the rotation. Ronnie Magruder, part of those guards. He's still the starter for now. So there's a lot of different players that Spoelstra has to juggle. They've been going 11 deep. The team seems to be into it. I just don't know how much longer that they can do it, because you're seeing guys like individuals like Roddy Magruder, who is playing 35 minutes a game at the start of the season. He's down to like 15 minutes a game now. So I don't know if it's the best solution, but it is the solution that Spoelstra is going with right now, David.
Well, I mean, as far as Rodney's concerned, I thought we always had agreed that he was probably playing too much anyway. Look, I mean, as much mm-hmm. as he was starting off the season really hot and doing some things that we had never seen from him as far as running the pick and roll and having some really good action together alongside either Adebayo or Whiteside. I mean, he was never really cut out for that role, and Miami was losing a lot of games at that point. So somebody had to put up big numbers. And again, I don't think that he was popping up in a lot of scouting reports around the league. And that's since changed. He's had a lesser role. Defenses have tied into what he's capable of. And I think they've managed to shut out a lot of what he does. But at his size, he was always playing out of position. There's a limitation to what he can do, I think. Look, the fact that he's improved his ball handling, etc., is fantastic. And he's a solid shooter overall. I don't think he's ever going to be a great one. And that's fine, but I don't think he should be getting a starting role. Like, he's probably a guy, I mean, not, okay, maybe I should walk that back. He should be starting alongside Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson, alongside undersized units with Richardson and Goran Dragic. He's probably not a good starting fit. So now that we've got Justice in the starting lineup, I don't mind the addition of Roddy Magruder because I think he does try hard.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And look, with Rodney, like, if he's been a capable starter at the three, what is the highest ceiling of this team? It probably doesn't include Roddy Magruder starting. You know what I mean?
No, probably not. I think those positions 1 through 3. If you look at the Memphis game, like, they were all guarding multiple positions.
Yeah,
it's not like Rodney's the starting small forward. It's just
right, and Rodney's oftentimes guarding the opposing point guard.
Right. Yeah, he started off on Conley, but then there were moments where Richardson and Winslow were both guarding Conley as well. So it's just a matter of convenience. Yeah, you know? I think that's a good.
And either way, I think we agree that you probably want somebody with a little bit more scoring punch at that, whatever that third position is, whoever, like, next to Richardson and Winslow in the backcourt on the perimeter.
Yeah. I think it could be Deion, but I think he's still kind of rounding into form. And I would say that at this point, Rodney's shooting is probably a little bit better, at least from three-point range. Maybe once Deion gets into a healthy rhythm and is a little bit more capable defensively, that's probably the best lineup, I think, with Wade.
With Deion in the starting lineup. Correct. Yeah, I think we've talked about that before. I'm a little worried about Deion's usage rate. I'm almost at the point where when Goran Dragic comes back, I kind of think he might be the fifth starter.
As a two-guard.
Yeah, whichever.
As one of those wing ball handler types, okay.
Yeah, I mean, Winslow would still be the point guard, basically. So, yeah, Dragic would be the two guard, and then you move Josh Richardson to the three, or whatever it is. Like, it doesn't really matter, because Winslow still guards, you know, threes on defense.
Yeah.
So, which is, like, a nice option to have. That's good versus, like, that's what you see with the 76ers. That's why they're able to start J.J. Redick next to Ben Simmons, because Ben Simmons just could, you know, guard bigger guys. But
by that rationale, though, if you're looking at Richardson as the former Robert Covington type and Justice Winslow as a kind of a Ben Simmons light because he's a taller point guard that can distribute and guard multiple positions, wouldn't the best fit be Wayne Ellington then, considering he's a lot more like J.J. Redick than we thought?
Sure, but Wayne Ellington, they're trying to trade Wayne Ellington, so he's not even an option at this point.
There's that,
so.
Yeah, I guess.
No, but I even said this, I think in the Memphis game, there at some point, because Whiteside was sick during that game, so Bam Adebayo got the start. And you had Bam Adebayo, James Johnson, Josh Richardson, Roddy Magruder, and Justice Winslow were starting. And I thought, like, hey, this would be a really interesting lineup to see Wayne Ellington in, because he would provide a little bit more floor spacing there. But Ellington's not an option anymore. Right. So, and then as far as Roddy Magruder is, last point on him, his minutes per game are down. His numbers aren't as good. The guy's having a really quietly rough January. He's only shooting 35% from the field in January. His rebounds are down. His assists are down. Now, granted, some of those counting stats come with the lack of playing time that he's getting, or the diminished playing time, I should say. But the field goal percentage is bad. That's not a good look. He's had a hard time hitting anything that isn't a three-pointer, and he's basically going 1 of 2 every night. So those stat lines are starting to look more and more like Luke Babbitt's stat lines, but...
Mr. Ming's question, though, about Derek Jones Jr. needing to play.
Yeah.
Like, would he be the ideal fit at the three? I mean...
Can't shoot. That's the problem. He's not a reliable shooter.
Yeah, that's the point there. I think... Look, it's a bad world where Roddy Magruder is probably still your best option as far as a floor spacer in comparison to either Deion, Dwayne Wade, Tyler Johnson. I mean, he's too undersized. He can't fit that wing role. Or Derek Jones Jr. So of the guys that could fill in on the wing... Rodney's probably still your best bet.
And that's why he's there, right? He's kind of just like this good default option who doesn't like take anything off the table. He's not a guy that's, you don't have to worry about like Deion Waiters going in there and taking the ball away from Justice. You don't have to worry about anything defensively, right? You know, because Rodney Magruder is still going to play really hard on defense. So, and you want somebody in that spot who can guard a backcourt position, because Richardson's guarding probably the two guard, you know, the shooting guard. Mm-hmm. Roddy Magruder has been guarding point guards. This is to start games, and they switch off as the game goes on. And then Winslow guards like the small forward, typically defensively. So it's not just offense you've got to worry about. You got to worry about the matchups on defense. But like, I don't know who loses the minutes. Like, I don't know. Deion has to play because you got to see what he's got for now. Tyler Johnson has been pretty good lately for the most part. You don't want to just take him out of the rotation. Right. Ultimately, what this comes down to is I think you shop all of them and see what kind of return you can get. And if it's a return that is worth trading the player for, you got to do it. And I think ultimately, Ellington's out, but he doesn't count part of the rotation. He's not getting minutes. I think you've got to shop Roddy Magruder. And then probably one of these other guys. Like, if best case scenario is, look, we're a fan of Deion Waiters and what he can bring to the table, and he's got the best on-court net rating of any Heat player right now. It's been a small sample size in four games, but still, he's been effective, even if his shooting percentage hasn't been great. But his contract goes 3 years beyond the season, and if you're the Heat and you're trying to look for flexibility in the future, you've got to try to shop Deion. It's not going to be easy, but you got to try to shop these guys and ultimately figure out which 10 you really want to roll with, because even that is a pretty deep rotation for the postseason where the Heat hope to be at some point. So it's not going to be easy. Let's get to this next question from Ernie, who asks, why does Spo continuously look Jay Rich's way in these late game scenarios? Which game was this after that we got this, David? What Denver, was that? The Denver game.
That was with the Olynyk pass where Josh got hip-checked by Jamal Murray.
That's right.
And wasn't able to make that cut to the rim. So, that was a particular disheartening loss because, again, Denver, it was after the Hawks blowout, so they needed some kind of encouraging sign. And, again, Denver, even though they were on the second night of a back-to-back, they're still the best team in the Western Conference, at least record-wise. And so a win against a strong Western Conference team like that probably would have put Miami on some more radars than they are right now. But as far as why Spoelstra is looking to Jay Rich's way, I think it's because he can be a versatile scorer. He definitely, of the other options that you're going to go to, who's the best combination of being able to get to the rim if necessary or shoot to three? Dwayne Wade is not a three-point shooter as good as his shot has looked or did look early in the season. I'm still not sure that Justice Winslow at least is not a volume shooter, even though his shot is much more improved. To me, I think Richardson is still the better overall offensive option. And moreover, I think this is about Richardson's place on this team. And it's one of the things that hopefully I'll be writing about soon. But I think it's just his role has been picked for him as to be this team's go-to player, the team's leader. He does a lot of things as far as his impact on the floor between his rebounding, his defense, and his playmaking. And his scoring is one of the things that he's improved on over the last couple of years of his career. But now he needs that confidence boost to establish himself as a go-to player. With Dwayne Wade on the way out, with Deion Waiters potentially off this team or not necessarily rounded into form, I think you need somebody established there, comfortable in that role, or at least to have that role defined for him, because to give him that opportunity, as they did earlier in the season, and then take it from him would be much more detrimental than anything else. Now, maybe he doesn't thrive in that role necessarily, but he's been good enough. He's had some good moments down the stretches of some games. There have been moments where he's faltered. I think we're focusing too much on those mistakes that he's made. And that Denver game, that wasn't his fault. They were just looking, and he had a good opportunity. And again, it could have been a good foul call to be made in against Jamal Murray. Unfortunately, it wasn't called.
Yeah.
You could put the blame on Kelly Olynyk for that pass, that maybe he should have just shuttled it to Deion Waiters, who was wide open and cutting to the perimeter.
What's the better option here for the Heat, right? Because when the Heat were going to Dwayne Wade earlier in the season, we got the same emails saying, like, why are you going to Dwayne Wade? This isn't his team anymore. Like, Spo relies too much on D. Wade. Look, where's the good option? Where's Kevin Durant on this roster, right? Like, there is no go-to scorer. That's been the issue for this Heat team all the time, and that issue, it's just exaggerated in the final 5 minutes of a game when you don't have that go-to scorer. And Josh Richardson right now, for your point, he's the most consistent off the bounce 3-point shooter on the roster. He is he can get to the rim. He's got that little scoop layup. He's got some moves, and he's got some mid range moves that he's been practicing. So he can do it at three levels. He can score at all three levels, and you just like he's as good as an option as there is now. With Deion coming back, with Justice Winslow coming into his own, I do think that Spoelstra's best bet at this point is to use that lack of a go to scorer in his favor and, you know, diversify who you're going to at the end of these situations. If you can keep the defense guessing, if they don't know that you're going to Josh Richardson at the end of the game, then all of a sudden you've got single coverage everywhere on the court, and you could end up getting a high-quality look in that way. And I do think that that's where Spoelstra's going to go, but for so much of the season, it's really just been Josh Richardson, right? We've only recently seen Justice Winslow blossom with the ball in his hands. We only recently have gotten Deion Waiters back, and Goran Dragic has been in and out all season long. He hasn't been healthy, so... And then you can always, again, go to Dwayne Wade when he's feeling it, when he's kind of having one of those vintage nights. And I think that's ultimately where Spo ends up on this. All right, this next question comes from Kyle, who writes in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. I like the way Tyler Johnson has been playing lately. We all know he's not worth $20 million a year and how that's the worst part of his contract, but the total contract was 4 years, $50 million. Do you think he's been worth the total contract so far? So, David, that's basically $12.5 million a year. Kind of the angle we took when this contract was first signed. Don't look at it as 19 and 20 million in years 3 and 4, but on average, it's 12.5 million a year. That's basically what the Miami Heat are paying him, 50 over 4 years. Do you think he's been worth it?
I mean, I don't want to use the word worth necessarily.
Okay.
It's just it's a little tricky for me.
Do you think he's played to the value of the contract?
That's even better phrased. I do not. I think still 12.5 million is a much more reasonable number and certainly one that I'm much more comfortable with. But when you look at the fact that Winslow and Richardson are going to be paying that over the next course of the next 4 years of their respective careers, it's a little harder to swallow, right? Like both of them have some much greater value, much more diverse skill sets, are capable of leading these teams in big stretches, whereas Tyler is not. I mean, I like Tyler. He's a really nice player, a really nice person on this roster. He has great chemistry with everybody. He gets along well with everybody. That's a fantastic benefit to have. And he does provide the occasional scoring bunches, most notably against the Orlando Magic for whatever reason. But at the same time, I just think there's a limitation to what he can do. Like, he provides some athleticism. He provides great effort all the time. But I think he's a little undersized. He'll always be that. And so you wonder whether or not, as a six man, even in that capacity, if he's the best value at $12.5 million. I'd probably be more comfortable with that being, I'd say, 8 to 10.
Yeah, that's the spot. Yeah, and you look at a guy like Lou Williams, who's basically making that. Toronto just signed Fred VanVleet to a two-year $18 million contract, I believe. So like at around, you know, $9 million a season. That's right where Tyler Johnson should be, not $12.5 million on average. You look at his numbers, 13.7 points per game 3 years ago, that 16-17 season. That's basically went down to 11.7 last year, 11.1 this year. He's plateaued. And look, that's fine. Like, this guy went undrafted. It's amazing that he's signed this contract and been in the league this long, right? I mean, that's credit to him. He's been a find for Miami. Unfortunately, they just gave him too much money. They thought that the cap spike was going to continue spiking like that. It didn't. So just like the cap, you know, the salary cap plateaued, so did Tyler Johnson's development, unfortunately. So, yeah, he hasn't played up to the value of the contract. But then again, like, part of the reason you could argue is that you see the development of guys like Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow. Like, there's a reason why the ball isn't in Tyler Johnson's hands as much as it was 3 years ago, right? And that's a good thing. Like, other guys have become go-to options, and now, you know, the Heat are, there's a bad contract on the books, but there's a good player that they have, and they've kind of sort of have to deal with it. So
I mean, look, his per 36 numbers are good, the second most of his career scoring wise, 16.1 per 36. I mean, his 3-point attempts are 6.4 in that range, and he's knocking down at over 38%. So I mean, he's making the most of his opportunity. It's just, it's always been difficult to swallow that solid, if not overwhelming, production because of that contract number. But even if you look at it prorated for 4 years at $12.5 million, it's still a little difficult to swallow, and that's fine. I mean, he's a good, solid player, probably one that's getting overpaid, and that's fine.
Charles writes in, right before the trade deadline, who do you see as the likely first person that the Heat would trade? And what do you think the Heat will probably pick up in return? David, I think this has to be Wayne Ellington.
It does, right? I mean, no other player stands out as far as somebody that you definitely want to jettison off the team. I mean, with the exception of Hassan Whiteside, and even that, I mean, obviously you're not going to find any takers. Nobody's going to be willing to take on Hassan's contract at this point. I don't think that there's any other player of great value to other teams around the league. Probably the best value to other teams is Wayne Ellington, because he's so specialized in his skill, which is three-point shooting. And maybe on another team that can utilize that skill and rely on only that and not necessarily on his defensive liabilities, the way Miami has come to understand that he is limited in what he can do.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of reports about teams that are very interested in Wayne Ellington. And I'm not sure what the holdup is. I mean, we've heard the Houston Rockets, the Lakers, the Milwaukee Bucks, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Like, those four have been reported out there by various outlets as interested in Wayne Ellington. And Wayne Ellington would help all four of those teams dramatically. But I don't know what the holdup is on Pat Riley's part and the Heat's front office. I don't know if they're looking for better offers, if they're waiting for something, if they're not getting the type of return. But, you know, you saw Kyle Korver get traded from Cleveland to Utah, basically for matching salary in Alec Burks, an expiring matching salary plus 2 second-round picks. I think that's the market for Wayne Ellington. So as far as, you know, the second part of that question, what do the Heat get back? Probably that. A matching salary, you know, something between $5 and $6 million, and probably 2 second-round picks or a late first-round pick. And that's what I think the return will be. Now that I'm talking about it, the holdup is probably trying to find a taker for that salary, because the Heat want to trade Ellington probably also to get under the luxury tax. So they don't want to take that matching salary back. If they take Ellington, at the very least, they want to be able to clear enough money. So you're probably trying to get one of these cap space teams, probably the Sacramento Kings or even like the Phoenix Suns or one of these teams that have a little bit of room to take that third salary that would be coming back, that matching salary that would be coming back. So that's probably what you have to work out. Do you have to, if it's a matching salary and 2 second-round picks, do you have to part with one of the second-round picks to that third team so you're really only getting 1 second-round pick in return? Probably. And is that worth it for Miami? You know what I mean? That's probably where the holdup is right now. Now that I'm talking through this, that's absolutely what's going on. Like, that's the only logical explanation, but that's probably where we're at this point. All right, well, that's all we have for today. Thanks for listening. If you got a smart speaker as a gift over the holidays, you could tell it to play podcast Locked On Heat. Connect with us on Twitter at Locked On Heat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Wrap it up, B.